Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation issues from all across the globe. Summer is often cited as a favorite season, what with long days and favorable weather for outdoor adventures. Living in Montana, however, summer has gotten shortened by a new worrisome season, fire. Months of smoke-filled skies, waking up to a layer of particulate matter covering everything, and a worry that seeps into every cell of my being makes it easily my least favorite time of the year. When the impacts of climate change are at my doorstep, the need to get nature on a better trajectory becomes urgent. Rather than utilizing great scientific minds to argue over whether what we are all experiencing and increasingly devastating examples is indeed reality, I've long been a proponent of developing solutions to strengthen ecosystems. This starts with scientists, land managers, and advocates working together. I spoke with Jeff Burrell, the recently retired Northern Rockies Program Director for the Wildlife Conservation Society, about the role of science in the long-term preservation of the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem in light of climate change. He beautifully articulates why using the best available science to choose how and where on-the-ground efforts are most effective has the greatest capacity to build climate change resilience at a landscape scale.
I'm Jeff Burrell. I'm the Northern Rockies Program Director for the Wildlife Conservation Society. I live here in Bozeman, Montana.
Tell me about the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem, what it is, why it's important, what's so amazing about it.
The Greater Yellowstone ecosystem is one of the largest intact temperate systems left globally. It is a globally iconic landscape. I mean, Yellowstone National Park is known globally. It is a model for how you do national parks. It was the first national park, and that idea has traveled around the world, and now many, many parks are based on that model of what Yellowstone is. The idea of a Greater Yellowstone came mainly from wildlife science, that we were seeing that as great as Yellowstone National Park is, that it can't by itself conserve grizzly bears or other species that we see as those iconic species in Yellowstone, of bison or elk or moose or pronghorn. We need to take a larger look because the wildlife, we're saying we need more area, we need more space. And that has driven the idea of a Greater Yellowstone system that's, the boundary is not defined by people, it's defined by the wildlife and the natural systems that depend on that. And so they tell us that they need more area, they need more habitat diversity. We extend those boundaries to encompass those areas. And one of the reasons that what started off for Wildlife Conservation Society is the Greater Yellowstone Program evolved into what we now refer to as the Northern Rockies Program, because wildlife was telling us that as important as Greater Yellowstone is and as big as it is, it's something like 28 million acres, it's too small. We need to connect it to the rest of the Northern Rockies. And small areas, relatively small areas like the Madison Valley, provide one of those key connections between Greater Yellowstone and the rest of the Northern Rockies.
Can you tell me about that connection and the importance of that connection?
Sure. Species that we worked on for many decades and are priority species for us, wolverines. There are likely less than 100 wolverines in Greater Yellowstone. That's not a viable population. The only reason that population is there is because historically it was connected to other populations in the Northern Rockies. In the central Idaho area, in the crown of the continent area, up by Glacier, and in the farther north into Canada. Without the connections between Greater Yellowstone and the rest of the Northern Rockies, we won't be able to conserve wolverines in Greater Yellowstone. And therefore, our program for wolverine conservation must extend to the extent that they need. And that encompasses all of the Northern Rockies, up through the U.S. Rockies, the Northern Rockies, all the way into Canada. And those connections, because of the way wolverines live, and because of the geography of this region, we have mountain chains that are separated by valleys, Madison Valley being a classic example of that. If they can't get across the Madison Valley, then we can't connect them between Great Yellowstone and the rest of the Northern Rockies. So small parts of the Madison Valley have an importance that far outweighs that area because it is a key connection between Greater Yellowstone and the rest of the Northern Rockies. If we lose those connections, either because of what humans do in the landscape or climate change degrading the habitats in those connections, then we break that connection. And if we break that connection, then we don't conserve wolverines, the same story for grizzly bears, the same story for cutthroat trout, the same story for elk. Those small areas that form these connections are vital to this much, much larger landscape. In context, the Madison Valley is a very important part of Greater Yellowstone in the Northern Rockies. It's, for many reasons, it's a fantastic ungulate winter range for elk, for pronghorn, mule deer. The mountains surrounding it are important provide important habitats for grizzly bears, for wolverines, for cutthroat trout. Through our analyses, and this is about a decade of on-the-ground work and followed up by different types of analyses, looking at the data in different ways, we have identified both the importance of the Madison Valley and the connection that the Madison Valley provides between Greater Yellowstone and the rest of the Northern Rockies, but in particular looking at the importance of riparian corridors and riparian habitats in that context. Although spatially these are very small areas for wildlife, they are very important areas. Almost all species depend on these types of habitats during the course of a year, during the course of a lifetime. That comes through in our models from our just tracking wildlife movements, habitat use.
Greater Yellowstone ecosystem is so big, and your science is saying work here. And how does that inform them to say these are the right actions, these are the right places?
It is a big area, and there are many things we could be doing. But the value of doing on-the-ground long-term research helps filter all those choices down to what are the most important areas, what are the most important issues. That of the many things you could be doing, from what we're seeing from our research and from our analyses, these are in particular are the most important areas. These are in particular the most important issues and actions that you could be taking. There are lots of things we could be doing, and there are lots of good people doing lots of good work. But to get the most value out of what you're doing and what they are doing, we need the best information to say these are all good things, but some things you could be doing are more important, more valuable in terms of helping you achieve the goals that you're setting out to achieve. And so of the many things you could be doing, the science we're giving you or providing to you helps you make that choice of, what's the most important things? What's the best value of actions that I could be taking with what I have? Where do I put all those resources that have the most impact in terms of what we're trying to achieve?
What's the importance of partnership, given that there are a lot of different conservation organizations and agencies that don't have the scientific sort of capacity? And so how do you feel WCS fits in with those particular organizations to fill that niche?
The role of WCS in the Greater Yellowstone and in the Northern Rockies, we're a science-based organization. We do on-the-ground research. We do that to inform changes in management. We're not doing science just to do science. We want to see things happen because of that. But we don't have the ability to manage the forest the way the Forest Service does or the lands of the Bureau of Land Management does. So our role is to develop recommendations and then work with our partners to get that information to them, work with them so that as they are implementing it, that they are doing it in the way that is most efficient and effective in trying to achieve the changes that are coming, the recommendations that are coming from our science that we're seeing. So it's a very strong partnership we have with the Greater Yellowstone Coalition, with the Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management. They benefit from us doing research and providing that information. We benefit from them from taking the actions that make the changes that actually benefit wildlife.
Do you feel like there's an important aspect of having really good science to help guide decisions when you have a limited amount of money?
It's a tough choice, and is one that we ask ourselves all the time when we're developing our strategy. you know, there's a limited amount of dollars. Is it better to put those into developing information? How much information do you need before you start to take actions? That's something we develop in conversations with our partners. We could go out there and spend all this money doing lots and lots of research and have no money available then to do actions, and that doesn't get us anywhere. But doing lots and lots of actions without having that science to inform you also doesn't get you to where you're trying to go in terms of actually benefiting wildlife and conserving the greater Yellowstone. So it's a trade-off, and it's a balance we achieve both through our experience, through our conversations with our partners. It basically gets down to the question of, do you have enough information to act? Do you have enough information or confidence in the information we're providing you to, you know, put your money on the table and do these actions on the basis of that, with the expectation that you're actually going to see those benefits? So it's a calculus that's not really rigorous. It's more art than science in achieving that balance. But I think we do a good job of balancing that between goal of doing all the science possible or doing all the actions possible without science. It has to be somewhere in the between those, and with our partners, we try to develop a good balance in doing so.
Do you feel like climate change or issues of climate change are catalyzing partnerships with organizations that hadn't previously existed?
Yes, it's making us think about the system in new ways, looking at it with a time factor that had not previously been there. We were sort of always assuming, well, things are as they are going, as they are now, or how they will be, and so we can take our actions on the basis of what we see now. With climate change, we're having to incorporate uncertainty, since the climate change models do not tell us with certainty what the changes are going to be or where they're going to be, what scale we're likely to see. That's been a challenge of working with partners who, when they're putting their actions on the table, developing forest management plans, or they want to make sure that they're doing the right thing and their money's being well spent. Climate change adds uncertainty to that. But it also adds a priority and an importance to those actions that otherwise was somewhat missing. We have to look at the landscape in a greater scale than we had in the previously, that actions need to be taken in the context of a larger landscape now, because climate change affects the landscape at a large scale. And so we may be doing the right things in certain spots, but if those don't connect to other actions going on in the landscape, then we're not actually achieving what we're trying to achieve in terms of making the system either more robust or resilient to climate change than it otherwise would be.
And do you feel like the work that WCS is doing in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem is providing the best available information for a variety of organizations and agencies to go out there and take the right actions, or take what we know as the right actions currently?
One of the advantages of working for a non-governmental organization the way the WCS is we're not limited by administrative boundaries. We can work at whatever scale our science is saying that we should be working at. We're not limited by the park boundary or a state boundary or a Forest Service boundary. That makes it sort of unique in this system, that our research spans the scale that it needs to span. We work with many, many partners in doing that that are, in a sense, limited by that, our research in Grand Teton National Park, extends beyond Grand Teton National Park, but their biologists can't actually work beyond Grand Teton National Park. In that research, will we then work with the Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management or others beyond those boundaries and pull those chains or networks of organizations, agencies together in a way that was missing? So it's an important role for us, and particularly for climate change, it's a necessary role because climate change doesn't honor boundaries. It's affecting the most protected area in Grand Teton National Park is the same way as, you know, affecting somewhere on private land. So we can't just say we're in a protected area, therefore we don't have to worry about this threat the way we do about other threats. And the way WCS works spans those boundaries and gives all of us and the agencies and our other partners that information at the scale they need so that they can see how their actions fit into that larger puzzle, and so that what they're doing has the greatest value because it connects then to what others are doing in their part of Greater Yellowstone or their part of the Northern Rockies. Climate change is a new threat. We have experience in dealing with other threats that we've been dealing with for generations. We know what to do in response to those. We don't need a lot of science in many cases to say what the action should be. I don't need a lot of science to say that subdivisions are a bad thing. We know that. Climate change is pushing us in new ways and new directions and in new scales that we need to think about. We could just go out and start doing things. And they're all good things. They probably all have good benefits. But they're likely not going to connect in the way that we need them to connect, at the scale we need to connect, to actually mitigate what the climate change effects are going to be. Because it's a new threat, we need that information. We need that high science bar, that high science foundation to direct what we're doing. We also need to understand to by doing science and what we're doing, to see are the actions we're taking actually changing the way we think we want them to change. That goes back to the monitoring of these actions. They're great, you're taking actions, but if they're not actually changing the system, changing the situation, you're not doing the improvements that you think you're doing. And so that science lays that foundation too. It gives us that connection between actions and reality that science always ties us back to. That you're not just doing good things and therefore you're wonderful, but you're actually doing good things and you're making a difference because you're seeing changes in the landscape because of that.
To learn more about the climate change work of the Wildlife Conservation Society, you can find links on the show notes page at wildlandsinc.org/EOC154. This episode was produced and hosted by myself, Catherine Dunning. Our theme music is by The Humidors.